You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
This is a repeat from the Best of the Climate Action Show 2025.
This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Hello, you're listening to 3CR Radical Radio 855 AM, and this is the Climate Action Show. We're broadcasting from 3CR studios here in Naam on the stolen, never-ceded land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, which, like the rest of the continent, always was, always will be, Aboriginal land. This show can also be heard in Sydney at Radio Skid Row. Welcome to today's show. I'm Rosie. With me are two very generous tech whizzes, Ducky and Angus.
Hi.
Hello.
Without whom I'd be just sitting here talking to myself. Ducky and Angus are part of the new Climate Action Show team and together produce their own monthly show, so listen out for them. Well, we're just days away from the federal election. Pre-polling is well underway and the lies trumpeted by the far right from every inch of public space it can get its hands on are truly alarming. That it continues to be legal to lie in political advertising is as outrageous as the obscene wealth and greed behind the lies. Which brings us to the topic of today's show, the Atlas Network. And to our guest, Dr. Jeremy Walker. Jeremy is one of the world's foremost experts on this topic, having spent over a decade researching the Atlas Network, though his only connection with lies is to expose them. Dr. Jeremy Walker is Senior Lecturer in the School of Communications, Faculty of Arts and Social Sciences, University of Technology, Sydney. He is a member and past director of CSIRC, Climate Society and Environment Research Centre at UTS. He is a research fellow of the Whitlam Institute, Western Sydney University, and of the International Climate Social Science Network based at Brown University, Rhode Island, USA. He is the author of More Heat Than Life, The Tangled Roots of Ecology, Energy and Economics, published in 2020.
Rosie and Jeremy recorded this interview 2 weeks ago on the 12th of April. I hope you enjoy.
Thanks so much, Jeremy, for coming on the show today. And I'm sorry about your broken foot, which has meant you couldn't be here in person, which is a pity, but we're really pleased to be talking to you on the phone from Sydney.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm really happy that you invited me on. I'd love to get very interested about what your listeners might have to say about this afterwards.
Great. Yeah, should be really interesting. Okay, so Jeremy, you've done incredible work over many years to understand and expose the operations of the Atlas Network. Yet I'd say the vast majority of Australians have never heard of it. So would you mind just explaining what the Atlas Network is and how it's been able to pretty much shape world politics, particularly in relation to the fossil fuel industry?
Okay, thank you. The way I came to be studying the Atlas Network was I've been reading for a long time as part of my research into the history of neoliberal economics, because it goes the Atlas Network. The reason people haven't heard about it is because they're not supposed to have heard about it. But people probably have heard of the Institute of Public Affairs and Melbourne. It's been around for a long time, and the Centre for Independent Studies here in Sydney. And you might have heard also about the Heritage Foundation in the States with the Project 25, which is a kind of large pre-planned 900-page document, which seems to be being executed very rapidly under presidential orders in the state. But the thing that really brought me into it was that I was, for a long time, kind of baffled by why it was that, like, for a very long time, scientists were saying that we have to radically reduce fossil fuel combustion, otherwise the Earth will become increasingly and irreversibly hotter and hotter and hotter, and there's no real end date to that, as far as we know. But it was, you know, I became interested in it because when I started to hear people, you know, from the early 90s coming out and saying, I know the science isn't settled and there's a lot of debate about whether it's really happening. But nearly all the time it was economists who were saying this, and economists don't have any expertise in the realm of, you know, physics or climate science or global ecology. So I thought it was very strange that people would be saying this so often. And when I looked into it, I realised that all of these economists tended to be people who were part of the Mont-Pelerin Society, which was established in 1947 by Friedrich Hayek, Austrian Nobel, and Milton Friedman, and a whole lot of similar-minded kind of laissez-faire economists. And then when I scratched into it a little further, I realized, in fact, that most of the, and in fact, probably all of them, all of the statements going right back to 1988-89, saying that we shouldn't do anything about climate change, or it wasn't real, or it was bad, or we shouldn't have a UN treaty that strictly timetabled phase out of fossil fuels, we shouldn't have carbon tax. All of these things were coming out of these institutes, which also had these economists on their boards. And then when I started to realise that, that all of these institutes were affiliated with an organisation called the Atlas Network. So the original Atlas think tank, the Atlas Network itself, has a number of meanings. So in the first instance, there's just a legal entity called the Atlas Economic Research Foundation, which was started in 1981, registered in the tax secrecy state of Delaware in the US. And its role was to litter the world with free market think tanks. So the Atlas Foundation, as the name suggests, was originally established as a way of putting money together from very wealthy donors and large corporations to propagate more and more of these free market think tanks. And its founder was Anthony Fisher, a British, a kind of wealthy British World War II pilot who came from a family that owned one of the biggest coal mines, not incidentally, in the UK. And in 1947, the British Labour government nationalised all of the coal mining in all the coal mines in Britain. And not long after this, you know, Fisher becomes incensed with this sort of with this new post-war settlement around the welfare state and public control of fossil fuel resources. And then he, in 1955, he establishes the Institute of Economic Affairs, which is the first neoliberal think tank in London. And no one, until recently, we didn't know who was paying for it. But from the beginning, it was Shell and Rio Tinto, BP, and other large international mining companies and banks that finance and so on. And then he became, this was very, very effective. So by 1979, when Margaret Thatcher was elected, she gave the Institute of Economic Affairs the credit for changing the climate of opinion, which made her government possible. In 1975, he was invited to Canada by, again, petroleum and mining interests to set up the Fraser Institute. That was the first neoliberal think tank outside of the UK. Then he came to Australia in 1976 at the invitation of John Bonython from Santos, the founder of Santos, to have secret meetings with wealthy businessmen and, you know, and people like Gina Reinhart, presumably. Then they set up one in Australia called the Centre for Independent Studies, and the first grants for that, the first long-term grants that made that possible were from Santos, Shell, Rio Tinto, BHP, which of course was in business, in the oil business with Exxon in the Bass Strait, and Western Mining Corporation, which owned the biggest uranium mine in the world in Olympic Dam in South Australia. And as John Bonython said in a letter to another royal executive at the time, the point of this was to overcome the public opinion that supported the Whitlam Labor government in respect of national ownership and equity in the mining industry, land rights for Aboriginal people, environmental protections, and so on. And then by 1981, he was in such demand that he started this new organisation, the Atlas Climate Research Foundation, and its job was not to be a think tank itself, but to mass produce think tanks all around the world. So to kind of train and vet and train talent to run these institutes and then put them together with money to, from a wealthy industrial or financial interests who wanted to change public opinion and influence government policy and block legislation or laws they didn't like. And so by 1988, when the climate issue suddenly appears on the front pages of the world's newspapers, later on that year, there's a letter we have, which is a publicly available internal PR letter from Exxon, saying that their approach to this would be to emphasise in public, to government and to the public, that the science was uncertain about climate change. We know that's not true because as early as 1959, the fossil fuel industry had been briefed by Edward Teller, the nuclear physicist who built the hydrogen bomb. He addressed the American Petroleum Institute in 1959 and warned them that, at some point, unless we move to electric cars, fuel cells, solar power, or nuclear power, of course, because he was obviously a nuclear advocate, that we would then, that New York would go underwater and all the coastal cities would eventually end up being flooded. That was 1959. So there was no reason, there was no record anywhere between then and 1988 of the fossil fuel industry having any doubts that what they were dealing with was in fact completely correct and true from a scientific point of view. But in 1988, they decided they would basically embark on a campaign of deceiving the public. And not long after the very first book by a scientist saying that the science wasn't true, but it was by Fred Singer, was published, and that Fred Singer's address, when he retired from his university position, and then he started this thing called the Science Environmental Policy Project, and the address for that was the exact same address as the head office of the Atlas in Virginia. He was in the office next door to the Atlas Network's head office. So, basically between 88 and at the present, the total size of the Atlas Network in another sense. So when we talk about the Atlas Network, it's really, we're talking about what's now at least 550 of these organizations that are aligned with, trained by, attend conference with, and coordinate strategy and have, meetings and conferences, which are, usually entirely private and off the record. So that's the network as a total entity, a giant infrastructure for trying to manipulate public opinion and swing elections and insert their people into key government positions, whether as elected members of parliament or as, running critical government institutions like, the EPA or the Productivity Commission or the Reserve Bank. The network as a total entity is huge, and it's across 100 countries.
That is Dr. Jeremy Walker explaining to us how the Atlas Network functions. You are listening to the Climate Action Show on 3CR, 855 AM. Coming up, Jeremy will explain again what the Atlas Network is and how to conceptualize it, as we continue with the interview.
There's a couple of ways in which you might think about what the Atlas Network is. Firstly, it's that single organisation at the centre of this giant web of influence and, I would say, disinformation and corporate propaganda. And then to think of the network as the totality of these 550-plus organisations, which they themselves claim as their partners. But even beyond that, we could, an even bigger sense would be all of the companies and private billionaires who invest in it, who are in the know and who provide the money to giant foundations in the US, which come from oil money, like the Scaife Foundation, Koch Foundation, which have built up the network in America. So there's something like 200 of the 550 worldwide are in North America. And that explains to me why we have this Trump phenomenon, because for decades the public has been bombarded with relentless, aggressive denial that climate change is real and so on and so forth. And so the largest sense would be all of those people, the funders, the think tank directors. But then there's another whole layer. So here in Australia we have 7 Atlas think tanks that are on that list. But then there's all of these other ones that they spin off to do other things. So we've had the Lavoisier Society, which was created to, you know, spread anti-climate policy and anti-climate science disinformation in the kind of 90s. Then they set up the Bennelong Society to train Aboriginal voices that they could then use to attack legitimate representatives of land councils and elected bodies like that. This is where Jacinta Price and Warren Mundine came from, Advance. And then you've got Advance, which is not officially related, but was, you know, set up and funded by people on the boards of the Centre for Independent Studies and the IPA and so on. So there's always other groups out there, like, we don't really know where they came from, but it's likely that they were closely aligned, like Australians for Prosperity. There's been, you know, dozens have popped up in selection, all pushing similar lines as the main Atlas think tanks are. We need nuclear, you know, renewable power is too expensive, and so on and so on.
That's all very terrifying. Have other people before you attempted to expose this, or have other people known about it?
That's a good question. I think to put it this way, you know, as a scholar, you're one of the tools we use is Google Scholar, which indexes, you know, academic books and publications in academic journals. And if you put in the word neoliberalism, that's even the, you know, the philosophy that was created by and for these think tanks and propagated by them. The scholars were funded by the same, you know, oil interests that set up the network as well. And they publicised their work and printed it and put it out into the media, and then they'd buy copies for, you know, and they'd send it to libraries and flood, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So that there was always their messages everywhere. I think there's about, so if you put in that term neoliberalism into a search engine, you'll find there's something like 7 or 8 million academic papers that have looked at it as a ideology or as an economic, you know, as the economics that's run, the economic theory and practice that's run the world since the early 80s probably. But very little of them have looked at the actual infrastructure that made that possible. So the Atlas Network has been very successful at disguising the fact that it is a coherent global entity, and also in disguising its funding. Mm. And so, yeah, there's very few people that have really looked into it as their main concern. It's been mentioned by several scholars in this literature. People have looked at it. People have been looking into the tobacco industry's, you know, corruption of scientists and manipulation of public opinion, bump into the Atlas Network because they did that for cigarette companies as well. And so a lot of people have bumped into bits of it. And, you know, Jane Mayer wrote a book called Dark Money, for example, a New York journalist, and she profiled four very, very wealthy American families, the Decote family, the Scaife Mellon family, the Olin Foundation, the Bradley family, that set up four of the huge big foundations, that allegedly charitable foundations, which are financed for decades, the building up of the Atlas Network in the States, but, you know, didn't notice the Atlas Network. So it's they've been very good at keeping themselves completely on the one hand, they have this thing where they're constantly pumping the public sphere full of their messaging and pretending that it's all independent voices. They call themselves non-profit independent research institutes, but and they never say on their own websites, if you go to the IPA, it won't say, we are a member of the Atlas Network and here's the other 550 members. It never says that on any of the other websites. So they give the public the impression that these are just, you know, legitimate independent voices, maybe with a conservative slant, but they're just individual organisations. But if you drill down into what they're saying, who the board members are, you see very much that they're very, actually a fairly small number of people, just with a lot of money behind them and a lot of power, and they're very well networked into, you know, governments and the right-wing parties to the point where, for example, I would argue that they've taken over the Liberal Party of Australia. You know, there used to be wets in the party. They're all gone now. The answer is that very few people have really looked at it, but now there's a huge amount of attention. I know that there's a lot of scholars out there and journalists who are suddenly extremely interested in. Yeah. We're seeing a lot of really interesting things coming out now that people are actually focusing on the Atlas and what it does.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Now, some of our listeners might remember that you've been on 3CR before, which was in December 2023, which was shortly after the devastating result of the Voice referendum. Can you give us a bit of an update on the Atlas Network's activities since then?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, the voice. Well, so I could talk a little bit about, before I talk about what's been happening in Australia, I can't really cover what's been going on in other parts of the world too much, but we all know about the Trump. We're all watching with, like, you know, in kind of horror at what Trump, the Trump administration is doing to US democracy. But I guess one of the things that really I would like to draw your attention to, you know, the voice and the no campaign was run, as I've demonstrated, entirely by, you know, the Atlas Network in Australia through the Centre for Independent Studies, the IPA, and they popped out this, they retooled this election disinformation engine called Advance, which is now everywhere in this election. They've got how to vote cards, even though they don't have candidates. They're a huge budget to try and prevent the Greens and climate independence and from getting anywhere in this election.
For anyone who's just tuned in, this has been Dr. Jeremy Walker explaining to us what the Atlas Network has been up to recently. Before we get back to the interview, we'd like to remind you of the Free Palestine rallies currently held every Sunday at the State Library at 12 p.m. Free Palestine. Coming up, Dr. Jeremy Walker will let us know some of the recent things the Atlas Network has been doing. You're listening to 3CR.
At the same day the referendum failed, there was an general election in New Zealand, and the Ardern government, which had been under attack by the Atlas operation there for, you know, banning offshore oil rigs. No more. They put a moratorium on offshore oil and gas drilling. They encouraged electric cars. They were encouraging Maori participation in environmental and governance and things like that. So Jacinda Ardern retired after a huge kind of riot outside the New Zealand Parliament, which was generated by angry farmers and anti-Maori activists and so on. And She was sort of, there was so much hatred directed towards her in that she resigned and was replaced by Chris Hipkins. And those protests were run by an organisation called Groundswell, whose website was registered by the New Zealand Taxpayers Union, which is another think tank. And when the government changed to a conservative coalition government, one of those coalition parties was the ACT party. It won 8% of the total vote, and it's called the, you know, Association of Consumers and Taxpayers. So they kind of use this, the regular person sick of being taxed sort of rhetoric when it's really giant corporations that don't want to pay tax. And they, on the same, the Deputy Prime Minister in New Zealand is David Seymour, who campaigned on used exactly the same phrases in his election campaign. We need to end division by race, exactly what the Advance used here. To disguise that it was really a mining and fossil fuel propaganda operation. They use this racial terminology, and he put in a bill to basically radically restrict the Treaty of Waitangi in New Zealand, which is a constitutional document allowing Maori membership, in, you know, guaranteeing Maori seats in the parliament and land rights and fishing rights and so on and so forth. So this is a key target for the fossil fuel industry because they have status to, you know, question or block fossil fuel projects and climate damage from them. They initiated a huge campaign to try to, radically reduce or bring down or redefine or limit the Treaty of Waitangi, the Constitution of New Zealand. So while we were not able to finally include Indigenous Australia in the Constitution here, over there, they tried to get rid of it, which has been longstanding for many decades, the recognition of the Treaty of Waitangi. And so the good news is that just yesterday, the Treaty Principles Bill brought by David Seymour, who was trained by the Atlas Network in Canada, in their fossil fuel fronts over there, that in Canada they say climate change isn't real and Indigenous people, you know, were never harmed and they should get out of the way and they should be treated like terrorists and so on. So he was trained by the Atlas, and then he instituted all these extremely radical things. But there's some good news coming out, is that the Parliament New Zealand voted on the Treaty Principles Bill yesterday. It was defeated 112-11.
Oh, fantastic.
So that is a very good bit of news. People came together. They weren't divided by the racist talk, and they defeated that bill.
Oh,
in Australia, we can see And the thing I'd like to point out, you know, if you think about all of the stuff that you've been seeing, all the right-wing stuff you've all been seeing flooding your Facebook or your social media or, the, you know, the Murdoch press or whatever, the campaign that then came up in Australia was, well, first of all, this campaign that we have to have nuclear power because it's clean and cheap. Now, obviously it's not cheap. Obviously it's not clean. Obviously nobody wants nuclear power in Australia. No one ever did. We've fought it off. For decades, there's been, you know, huge, you know, going way back to the Maralinga, there's been resistance to, you know, the, nuclear weapons testing, nuclear weapons in the Pacific, against uranium mining in Australia, against, you know, the protests against the Pine Gap facilities and that, you know, are part of the US's nuclear warfare targeting and so on, and make us a nuclear target. Australians have never wanted nuclear. And so suddenly we got everybody saying we need to have nuclear. There's this kid on TV saying kids love nuclear, who, of course, is platformed by the Centre for Inland Studies and the IPA and the Brisbane one, the Australian Institute of Progress. So that this came out of nowhere, but the only reason that anyone was talking about it was because they generated this huge propaganda campaign. And then, you know, we had another one saying that wind farms are going to kill whales, and this is, again, something that, which has just been brought from the east coast of the US, where there's three or four Atlas Partner Associations over there, Texas Public Policy Foundation, Heartland Institute, Cesar Rodney Institute, and a couple of others. And they started to run this, you know, the wind farms in the east coast of the US are killing whales. Of course, there's absolutely no reason to believe this is true. The main thing that's killing them is global warming, heating up the ocean, and, you know, ships and tankers carrying coal, oil and gas, which is 50% of ocean traffic running into them, you know, stuff like that. So, or offshore seismic testing and blasting and drilling, like, it's the fossil fuel industry which is killing the oceans. But they managed to, you know, spread the same message into Australian Facebook groups, and then suddenly there's all these, you know, these very opaque so-called citizens groups that are worried about the environment and they desperately want to stop offshore wind because of their environmental concerns. And then, you know, this has been running in all of the areas that the current government under Chris Bowen has been opening up these offshore wind industry zones. The legislation itself was passed by the previous Liberal government, but suddenly, you know, we've seen this whole thing running. All of these protests against renewable energy, Rational National Energy Network, the sabotaging of meetings in rural councils where they're discussing this stuff, where people turn up and shout and carry on and make the discussion impossible. And just in both of those cases, you have Atlas organisations running them. Advance came on to the wind farms, the killing whales stuff. The people in the Facebook groups that are really running this, as opposed to the people that are just picking up and, you know, perhaps ignorant people or, you know, NIMBYs who don't want to have, you know, who think that their views of the sea will be ruined. Mm. But otherwise, you know, the people who are leading this are all people, again, who are linked to the Atlas Network think tanks in Australia and overseas. So, and then in both these cases, right, we need nuclear and we have to kill the offshore wind industry. After several months of this propaganda being run, then Peter Dutton picks this up and makes it Liberal policy.
Yes. Yes, well, speaking of federal elections, and we saw what happened to Jacinda Ardern. And what do you think is going to happen this federal election? And whom can we trust and whom should we distrust?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, what's going to happen, I can't predict. But I don't think, the thing is that, you know, there used to be a time in Australian politics, and I'm old enough to remember this, when, you know, the political parties, the Liberal Party and the Labor Party, had a strong base in, you know, branches in communities whose members had say in the selection of candidates, and then they also fed into, you know, they had discussions and, you know, relatively open discussions about what would be a good policy for Australia and so on. Now, what we see now is that basically the Liberal Party has no public policy statements at all, as far as I can gather. They just basically, you have these propaganda campaigns being run by like PR and Stratcoms agencies, hundreds of fake, you know, Australians for gas, Australians against wind, you know, Australians for nuclear. But they're not really got any Australians in them, and they're just really set up by and for fossil fuel and mining interests. So I really don't think it's going to work for him this time. I think, you know, nobody wants nuclear waste and nuclear power stations. They're enormously expensive. We don't even have a way of cooling them. There's no rivers that are big enough to cool a nuclear reactor in Australia that are reliable enough. And the only reason that they're proposing it is because it will, you know, is one, to destroy it, to distract attention from the absolutely urgent need to build out, you know, 300% clean energy and shut the fossil fuel industry down. And secondly, you know, it may provide a fillip to the people who own the uranium leases at, you know, Roxby Downs and Jabiluka and places like that, namely BHP and ERA and Rio Tinto. Mm. Yeah. I think that in terms of who should we trust, well, we have the Advance is using the most dirty tactics around, and apparently they're unrestrainable by the AEC. You know, we're seeing kind of quite, I would call, brown shirt tactics on polling booths in Tehran, where they, you know, intimidated people. And their whole campaign now is that, you know, the Greens aren't what they used to be. So they're putting all of their very large financial resources in trying to destroy the Greens at the ballot box, trying to paint anybody who is unhappy about the kind of genocidal actions in Palestine as a extremist and a terrorist, and they're using this tactic against Greens candidates and Teal candidates in, you know, local councils, in states, and in the federal election. So I would say anything, if Advance is telling you to do something, do the opposite. If the Murdoch Press is saying that, you know, it will be a disaster for the economy if, you know, there was a kind of a coalition crossbench Labor Teal / Greens government, would be terrible, and they quote the head of Woodside to that effect. Yeah. Whatever they're saying is bad is probably good for us, and because, you know, the only interest they really, like, if you think of all of the policies that Dutton has announced, right? Cheaper petrol, you know, you're going to cut the fuel excise. They're going to abolish the Department of Education and sack all the public servants, just like Project 2025 promised, and then Trump is now executing. No one likes these policies. Mm. They're not possible. They're not good for anybody except the fossil fuel industry, which is, you know, boiling our reef. Ningaloo's dead. You know, it's gone. Mm. Great Barrier Reef is gone. So I think who would you trust is that anybody who is out there actually advocating for policies that are just and in Australia's national interest.
Sounds like good advice. And as you said, do the opposite to what Advance tells you to do. Yeah.
You are listening to the Climate Action Show on 3CR. And that has been Dr. Jeremy Walker telling us about how the Atlas Network influences our electoral politics here in so-called Australia. Coming up, we have Rosie asking Dr. Jeremy Walker some more very interesting and informative questions about the Atlas Network.
Getting on to the media, obviously the Murdoch media are well and truly embroiled in the Atlas Network. But to what extent are other mainstream media influenced by the Atlas playbook, the ABC, for example?
Yeah, well, I mean, the interesting thing that I'd really like everyone in Australia to understand is that the Murdoch Press was established in 1920 by Melbourne mining monopolies, the Coal and Towse Group, Western Mining, Consolidated Inc., Broken Hill South, Broken Hill North, for the explicit purpose of doing propaganda for the mining industry, and they said so in their own correspondence. Keith Murdoch used to run the Herald and Weekly Times group in Melbourne, which was owned by the Baillieu family and the Collins House group, and then they put him in charge of News Limited. And when Rupert Murdoch inherited that in 1952, Keith Murdoch had already worked with those companies to set up the Institute of Public Affairs. So it goes like this in Australia. You have these giant mining companies that dominate the industry, that are financed offshore in those days on the London Stock Markets and now on Wall Street. And they dominate the media for their interests. Then they set up the IPA to do propaganda against the Labour Party that was in government in World War II and after. And then they set up the Liberal Party. So that's the sequence of causality, and it still holds true, right? What the mining industry wants, the Murdoch press goes out and pummels everyone for, and then the IPA says it too, and then the Liberal Party says it as well. So, but the other interesting things we have to be concerned about is that, so Channel 7, for example, is 40% owned by the Seven Group, which is most of its investment is actually in oil and gas on the Northwest Shelf, where it's in business with Shell and has people on the board from Exxon and so on. So Channel 7 is not going to push climate policy aggressively. It's not going to give a fair hearing to parties that are like the Greens or the Teals. And in terms of the ABC, the ABC has always been a high-stakes target for these interests. They never wanted the ABC, and they've always fought to make it as humble and disciplined as they can. During that Tony Abbott and John Howard appointed boards, we had Maurice Newman, who founded the Atlas Network in Australia, who set up the Centre for Independent Studies, who's the founder of Advance. He was on the chair of the ABC board during the Howard era, and then the Abbott era, and then during the Abbott era, I think there were five or six people from the IPA and the CIS on the board of the ABC. So it's been a long process of trying to kind of discipline the ABC so that it doesn't say anything that upsets the still foreign-dominated fossil fuel industry too much. And how that works now, I really don't know, but I can tell your listeners that since I was on the ABC radio talking about Atlas Network and the Voice campaign in 2023, I now know that the head office in the States sent a letter of complaint to the ABC, presumably at that time. Mm-hmm. I've been approached by 10 ABC journalists since 2023 looking for information, evidence, about what the Atlas Network is up to in Australia. I've taken plenty of time to give them all the data and primary evidence and documents I have. We're talking about people from Four Corners, foreign correspondents, a number of different ABC investigative news programs, and none of it has ever made it to air.
Wow.
I don't know how this works, but I presume that what's happening is we have people inside the ABC that are at some kind of high level that are, on the one hand, you have the Murdoch press, which is constantly trying to get rid of the ABC. You have Senator James Patterson, who, whilst he was at the IPA, campaigned for obviously the destruction of the carbon pricing, clean energy policies of the Rudd and the Gillard era, but was also demanding that the ABC be sold off and privatised. So they have this kind of constant being battered by the IPA and by the Murdoch press. And I'm kind of a bit terrified of that. And then on the other hand, there's people on the inside that also somehow make sure that, the ABC doesn't say anything that it will upset those interests too much. Mm. I'm not sure how it works. Mm. But the other really, we have, so it's quite a difficult situation in that we have, in Australia, we have the mainstream press is really either owned by or completely intimidated by the huge fossil fuel interests in Australia. We have very scrappy, independent, brave journos that, try to do good work, but are always at risk of getting sued and bankrupted. But the other thing that's really alarming, and I'd really, really want people out there to pay close attention to this, is that right as we go into an election campaign, an organisation called Australian Digital Holdings has teamed up with a very right-wing Trumpian American cable news company called Newsmax, and they've bought out one of the few regional independent broadcasters now called Southern Cross Austereo, and not long after that deal, you had a look at the ADH TV's own website. So then this company was set up by the, let's say, disgraced broadcaster Alan Jones and Maurice Newman. Once again, Maurice Newman, he was the one who brought Milton Friedman, flew him directly from Chile, where he was advising the Pinochet dictatorship on its first experiment in neoliberal policy, flew directly from Chile to Australia to preach against the Whitlam government in 1975. They tried to blame the oil price inflation on the Whitlam government's social policies. And then he set up the Centre for Independent Studies with John Bonython and Hugh Morgan. He got all that money from the oil and mining industry together to do it. Maurice Newman also was on the board of Advance. He set up Advance, which is now this massive propaganda monolith and registered somehow legally, but amazes me that it is, but as an election campaigner, despite not running any candidates of its own and basically running the Liberals' policy. It's not considered a third party of the Liberals or anything like that. So they have bought this TV network, and if you look at, they published on their own website that they even had, these are our partners, and the partners were the Institute of Public Affairs, Centre for Independent Studies, Advance, the CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee, which has an Australian branch, which is controlled by the American Conservative Union, and their heroes are Viktor Orban, who has established a more or less a dictatorship in Hungary. Tony Abbott is a huge fan of Viktor Orban and writes for the government, you know, think tank over there. They've abolished clean energy in Hungary, and they're building nuclear plants. You know, they've cowed the judiciary. You know, Hungary is not really a democracy anymore. And so the CPAC is on that list, on the list of ADHDV partners. Then there's also the Samuel Griffiths Society is on the list, which is the kind of, you know, it's not affiliated officially with the Atlas, but it's been operating for a long time. It also was set up by Hugh Morgan in the 80s, and, you know, it has people on it, Janet Albrechtson, who is also an ex-director of the IPA, recently was saying that the Samuel Griffiths Society should do what the Federal Society has done in the US, that is take over and stack the courts. The Federal Society in the US is, of course, another member of the Atlas Network. So, you know, the other partner organisations, so that's all Atlas think tanks or think tanks that were set up by Atlas people and are populated by them here in Australia. And then you have also another one of its partners is the One Nation, Pauline Hanson's One Nation Party, which, of course, you know, says all the right things about climate change isn't real and has done for years. Mm. One Nation were filmed by Al Jazeera a few years back, secretly trying to get money from the Koch Foundation, which is one of the biggest funders of the Atlas in the States. Mm. So, you know, the Koch brothers have plowed hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars into building up the Atlas network. Their income comes from oil refining. One Nation were filmed asking them for money to change the Australian electoral system. Yes. Then you have, what else is there? There's got Family First, which is a kind of, you know, radical Christian right-wing organisation, which has also been funded by the Cormac Foundation in the past, I believe. The Cormac Foundation is the Liberal Party's big fund, which is controlled by Charles Good, who's been on the board of the IPA and was the director of Woodside.
You're listening to the Climate Action Show on 3CR, 855 AM, community radio.
Again, terrifying.
We should be blocking this. Like, surely there's that the communications minister should be looking at this. Well, surely there's a way to stop this.
Yeah.
This is a foreign-controlled entity which is going to, again, further destroy Australia's media and therefore its democracy.
Yeah, but it's the same names keep cropping up throughout everything that you're saying, which sort of a relatively few people, but with just the most massive reach and influence. Look, one last question I've got is about what we can do about it. What sort of action, and climate activists know as well as anyone that the antidote to despair is action. And even though it seems that the odds are stacked against them, and quite deliberately so. Is there something you'd like to say to those who can and will continue to rebel?
Oh, thank you. It's a really good question. It's always the hardest one because on the one hand, what I'm telling you is quite daunting. But, you know, as I began by talking about how in New Zealand people rallied together, they saw this campaign for what it was. And it was interesting that, you know, that there was a TV, the New Zealand public broadcaster has a Maori-run current affairs show, Mata Reports, and very early in the government, they ran a piece exposing the Atlas Network in New Zealand, and this became part of the conversation very early. So I think, and I think that's, you know, obviously, you know, there was a lot more to it than this, but very quickly they were put on the back foot, having to deny that they existed, having to try and, you know, writing complaints to the news media, trying to get these shows removed from TV and so on. I think that people could go out there, first of all, just talk about it a lot to everyone. And, you know, whenever you see a message like, oh, we need nuclear or the IPA or something, that is just all Atlas Network propaganda designed to take over our governments and our institutions, you know. So on the one hand, it's scary, but it also makes a lot more sense to see that this is actually quite coherent. And there's, as you say, a very small number of people running this whole operation. So we've looked at, you know, some friends, scholars that I'm working with. We've looked at all 550 of the Atlas think tanks that they used to list on their own website. And if we look at the actual how many staff are running these think tanks, so not including the typists and the kind of office level employees, if we look at the executive directors, managing directors, and the academic boards, which is usually right wing economists from the business schools, and then if we look at the supervisory boards, which indicates their funding, even though they don't tell us their funding. We see again, major backers of fossil fuel companies, or the banks that underwrite the fossil fuel industry. So it's and so looking at all 550, there's something like only 7,000 or 8,000 people running the whole operation in 100 countries. So it's actually a very cheap, small operation from the point of view of the profits of the fossil fuel industry. But what I would say is, what can people do? So firstly, I would say one of the first things that people can do is stop talking about climate action, because it is a really vague thing to talk about. We can't act on the climate. The only way we do act on the climate is by burning fossil fuels and making it hotter, right? That is the only thing that we do that acts on the climate at that scale. So the only thing we can do is to shut down the fossil fuel industry.
Yeah.
Right? And they've known that. They've known that themselves. It's in their own internal scientific documents. The only thing you can do about climate change is stop burning fossil fuels. And that means we have to shut down the industry. So anything that's, what does that mean? Well, I think, any politician that's supporting clean energy development, home batteries, should be given the fullest support. I think Chris Bowen has done an amazing job in that. Otherwise, in some areas, disappointing Labor government that has not done anything to raise taxation from the fossil fuel industry. From a very low level, they've done nothing to halt the huge expansions of methane emission projects, on the West North Shelf and so on. But yeah, I think Christopher Bowen deserves their support. And I think the key thing to look at is that the way the propaganda works is firstly to make you feel that you're isolated and the only one out there who's sane. Everybody else is crazy, so you just want to give up. That's one of the effects. So it's that they massively overestimate their own strength, I think, and we do too. Secondly, they will try to isolate anyone. So, for example, they'll have people saying, oh, will you rule out forming a government with the Greens? They'll be getting that all the time. Even though Labor only gets in with 12 to 13% of Green preferences to add to their, they only make about 33% primary vote. They rely on the Green vote to get in year after year, but then they're always under pressure to sell out that section of the voting base. Likewise, the targeting of the Greens by Advance is in part designed to scare the Teal candidates or the Independent candidates from any association with them. But they should be uniting with them because they have the same objectives, which is to, defeat the fossil fuel industry and maintain our democracy. So what can you do? I think, I would be encouraging people to make as much noise to the various authorities as they can. Why are we allowing the Atlas Network to take over another TV station? Like, where is ACMA? Where is the Communications Minister? Mm. Why is the AEC and the electoral authorities allowing such rampant disinformation because these organisations have so much money, they're quite willing to, you know, get a little slap on the wrist fine from the AEC if it, you know, it doesn't stop them at all. Mm. So how are they allowed to run like this?
Mm.
I guess that's what I would say is in terms of the voting behaviour. Like, yeah, as I say, vote against whatever they're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do the opposite of what they're saying, but yes. Also try. We need to build these big coalitions not only across Parliament but across society, so yes. that those parties which are not entirely captured by the fossil fuel industry can actually get together rather than constantly being wedged apart and being forced to deny that they're working with the other people that are also trying to have a rational climate policy and protect democracy.
Yeah. Well, as usual, 3CR's doing its bit to get the get the message across. And, yes, thanks so much for being so brave. I know you've had to, you know, answer to a few complaints from the Atlas Network, which is pretty interesting. But thank you so much.
Well, everybody should be brave. Yes, they've got nothing to lose but the earth itself.
Well, exactly. Yep. Okay. Yeah, we really, really appreciated your talking to us today, and I've certainly learned a lot more, and I'm sure all our listeners have. So, thank you again for all your amazing work. Thanks, Jeremy. Great to talk to you.
Is it possible I could just add one more thing?
Absolutely.
So another thing that I've been doing, if people want to learn more, the Senate Environment and Communications Committee established an inquiry into the offshore wind industry consultation process, largely due to the fact that it was, you know, systematically gamed with fake submissions and fake entities and, you know, people being paid or induced to make submissions under fake addresses. And so I took the opportunity to write a 13-page report on how the Atlas Network has been extending and then running this whole campaign across Australia in all the offshore wind zones. And included in that several articles, two of which are mine, which are the history of the Atlas Network in Australia, another one by a professor in the States showing that the Atlas Network over there has from primary documentation from the tax department, which is public over there, somewhere between $3 and $6 billion has been run through the Atlas Network organisations that specialise in denying climate change and opposing climate policy. And then there's a very interesting letter there from the Atlas Network itself, where they basically say that I'm making it all up, but they don't deny any of my actual claims or the 400 references in their submission.
Okay.
And so have a look at that. Yep. And there's also, you know, the Greens senators Peter Whish-Wilson and David Shoebridge have made several speeches now.
Absolutely. Yep.
Parliament. Yep. So please go and look them up because the press will not play them or show them.
No. We're going to put links to all of that information on the website. So anyway,
thanks. Thank you so much.
No worries.
thanks for letting
and
me
look after your foot. Oh, that's our pleasure. Thanks. Okay,
appreciate
take
it.
Care. Thanks, Jeremy. Bye.
Okay. Goodbye, Melbourne.
Thanks.
Great.
Isn't he amazing?
What an excellent interview brought to you by the wonderful Rosie and Dr. Jeremy Walker on the deep and insidious workings of the Atlas Network. You're listening to the Climate Action Show on 3CR. And before we wrap up, Rosie has a few more things to share with you all. Thanks, Rosie.
In our interview, Jeremy mentioned the recent Senate speeches by Greens Senators David Shoebridge and Peter Whish-Wilson. Here's a small sample from each one, starting with Senator Shoebridge.
So-called Advance Australia is just the Liberal Party's most extreme faction. Advance is a front group for the most conservative and divisive elements inside the coalition. It was started by people who were literally Tony Abbott's factional allies and mates. They want Prime Minister Dutton so the grift can continue. We hear from them that it's all grassroots and common sense, but it's literally billionaire climate change deniers trying to overturn our democracy to line their pockets.
Tonight I wish to shine a light on and warn the Australian people of the International Atlas Network, an unnamed but powerful global network of political actors operating in Australia, the United States, New Zealand, indeed 100 other countries, producing disinformation on a vast scale through its 580 partner organisations, working to infiltrate and take key roles in public institutions to achieve discipline and control of government policy, legislation, the media and the courts and the public service. A many-headed hydra, constantly changing its shape, its tentacles firmly clutch Australia.
You've been listening to the Climate Action Show. In this episode, we've heard Dr. Jeremy Walker talk about the Atlas Network, the secretive, hugely influential network of ultra-conservative so-called think tanks that has been very successful in shaping government policy and public opinion to suit its donors, primarily the fossil fuel industry. But hopefully their time is up. More and more journalists, even from mainstream media, are now finding the moral courage to expose the Atlas Network. Some listeners will have seen recent articles in the Nine Facts papers, Good Weekend, and on the ABC. There'll be links to all the resources we've mentioned and many more on the Climate Action Show website, www.3cr.org/climateaction. I'd really encourage you to take a look and to share what you learn with your communities. As Jeremy said, it's one of the most effective things we can do. We can also use the ballot box to demand an end to the lies and an end to fossil fuels. Thank you, Ducky and Angus, so much for your tech support and all your other support and for your seamless editing. And of course, thank you so much, listeners, for joining us. You can hear the Climate Action Show again, same time, next Monday. Next up on 3CR is Breadline with the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. To see us out, we're going to play a song written by Patti and Fred Smith and released as a lead single from Patti Smith's 1988 album Dream of Life. It's called People Have the Power. A great song. I really like the line saying that through our union we have the power to wrestle the world from fools. It's also a great song to belt out on the dance floor.
Unfortunately, we can't play music on the podcast, but it is definitely a great song to end on if you want to go have a listen on your own. Thanks for listening.
This was a repeat from the Best of the Climate Action Show 2025.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.